Americans suffer a concussion each year, with most due to car accidents, falls, or assaults. But as many as 300,000 of these are the result of sports-related injury and can lead to months of troublesome symptoms or to long-term brain damage and even death. What makes matters worse is that the symptoms of concussion are hard to diagnose and often go unrecognized. And in the highly competitive world of today's sports culture and the pressure to get back in the game, many concussions do not get the proper treatment or attention they require to prevent these dangerous consequences. But none of this is new to our guest this morning, psychologist Dr. Brian Rieger, the director of Upstate's Concussion Management Program and the Central New York Sports Concussion Center, which offers a multidisciplinary approach to brain trauma, as well as providing needed education to athletes, parents, and coaches here in Central New York. Welcome, Dr. Rieger.
Good morning, Linda.
It's great to have you here today.
Nice to be back.
Especially in the midst of football season. It's a perfect time to be talking about this topic.
Indeed.
You know, let's start with what define concussion to for us.
A concussion is a mild traumatic brain injury caused by a blow or a jolt to the head. The characteristic feature of a concussion is a disruption in the brain's functioning. That's important because the brain usually looks normal on a CT scan or MRI, but we know it's been injured because it's not working properly.
So is it different than traumatic brain injury, or is it just a milder form? Or
a concussion is a traumatic brain injury, but yes, we use the term mild traumatic brain injury. That's a little, we have to be a little careful with that term, because mild refers to the fact that in most cases, when properly recognized and treated, the injury is short-lived. There's complete recovery in a short amount of time. However, the consequences in some cases, are not so mild.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking much more about that. Tell me, why is it so hard to diagnose and it's often missed? I know there are a lot of myths about what is a concussion.
It's often called the invisible injury, and that's in part because there is no biological marker for the injury. So again, a CT scan or MRI of the brain usually is normal in the vast majority of cases. There's no blood test. The person often looks fine. The symptoms can be quite significant, or they can be subtle. So, and I think also there's a lot of misunderstanding about concussions still, even though it's been in the news quite a bit.
Yeah, I know there have been myths about, like, you know, you don't have a concussion if you didn't black out, for example.
Yes, many people don't realize that only 10% of athletes, for example, actually lose consciousness. So if that's your criteria for diagnosing a concussion, you're missing the vast majority of them.
Are there other myths that people, you know, other misconceptions, for example? I don't know. I remember when my kids were playing sports, they said, you know, well, if there's no, you don't see any marks on the head, there's no visible injury, there can't be a concussion.
Yes, I think that's definitely one of the myths, that if we can't see it, it must not be there, when in fact the opposite is true. Also, there's all sorts of misunderstandings. I often ask high school athletes or younger kids, I say, hey, tell me what a concussion is and what do you know about it? And, you know, I'll get all sorts of answers, from it's bruising and swelling to, it's a severe injury that lasts at least a year. So there's all sorts of misconceptions that people have.
Well, hopefully today we'll shed some more light and clarify some of these. And also there's all this idea of playing through the pain, you know. Oh, so you just blacked out. Well, you're clear right now. Go back in and save the day for us.
Well, I think I'm glad you brought that up, because if there's one take-home point to make about concussion, is that while it is usually a minor injury with no long-term consequences, the chances of having problems is much greater when a person gets another injury before they're recovered from a previous one. And that's our message to athletes, encouraging them not to hide symptoms, to take it seriously. To parents, to educate themselves about concussion and how to recognize it, and to make sure that people get properly treated.
Yeah, I think that's what you're all about. I read some interesting statistics that some studies of sports-related concussions say that more than a third of athletes themselves did not recognize the symptoms, and then didn't report them, and then like 28% continued to play after a blow to the head caused them to be dizzy. That's frightening.
Yeah, it's interesting. The official estimates of concussion reported by medical staff, say trainers, is, you know, hovers between 8 and 10% of high school athletes. But when there are some studies that have done anonymous phone surveys of athletes and gone over the symptoms of concussion with them, and you get estimates as high as, you know, 2/3 of athletes in a football season may have had a concussion.
Wow.
Now, the symptoms of a concussion are not specific to a concussion, so we do have to be careful about that. But I think there's no question, there's a general recognition that it's still under-recognized and under-reported.
You know, how serious is it in general? I mean, in terms of the incidence, I know that almost over a million children play high school football these days, and I think that somewhere I read that 70,000 reported concussions occur in high school football each year alone.
That's right.
So is it a very serious problem on, you know, going on throughout the country as well?
Well, the Centers for Disease Control recognizes sports concussion as a significant public health issue. Estimates of concussion and traumatic brain injury in general are going up, in part because there's better recognition and reporting of the injuries. In sports, what we see is that people are getting more serious about their sports at younger ages. They're playing more sports. And, you know, there's a lot of sports that don't even, you know, have ways of counting their injuries. A lot of youth sports organizations, they're really not on the radar screen. You're talking about high school sports where they have tracking systems or emergency room visits. But there's probably even more than that that's actually occurring.
And today with Title IX, we have girls out there also, many more. You know, it's almost double the number of athletes that we had before, seriously playing at younger ages.
And in sports played by both boys and girls, girls consistently actually have a higher concussion rate, such as in soccer or basketball.
Well, stay right there. We've got lots more to talk about. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back with much more of what you should know about concussions. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYR. Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with Dr. Brian Rieger, and we're talking about the seriousness of sports-related concussions to our young athletes. Now, right before the break, we were talking about the incidence of this. I'd love to know what you think the incidence in Central New York is, especially not just in high school, but, you know, is there any way of knowing?
It's hard to know. Again, my best guess from the research that I've seen is that, you know, at least 10% of athletes playing in sports will suffer a concussion in a given season. That's a good rough estimate, probably higher or lower depending on the age. And interestingly, because high school age youth and middle school age youth are participating in sports more than other ages, the percentage of concussions due to sports at those ages is higher than at other ages.
Well, that makes sense. You would expect that.
And also, high school age youth actually seem to take longer to recover than other age groups. And they think there's something going on in the brain developmentally that puts them at particular risk. And that's why there's a special emphasis on high school athletes. I've been working with the New York State Public High School Athletic Association for several years now to do statewide education focused on that age group.
It's very interesting. From what I know about neurological development, I know you have, up until about the age of 13 when it comes to language development, you have what they call equipotentiality of both hemispheres. So if you should sustain a serious head injury to the left hemisphere, which is usually the language dominant hemisphere, you generally can recover and develop kind of the other side of the brain takes over. So there is something, obviously, there's more plasticity in the brain when you're younger. And when you're talking about high school, you're already past that point, 14 to 18. And it would make sense that perhaps any injury would have a more long-lasting, potentially long-lasting effect.
I mean, that's a good point. And we think that the frontal lobe is the last part of the brain to fully develop. And the thought is that there's a critical window of development in high school going on there that's requiring extra brain energy, actually. And that's Interestingly, the frontal lobes are also the most vulnerable to traumatic brain injury, regardless of where you hit your head.
That's very interesting.
So there's some thought that the frontal lobes are uniquely vulnerable, and uniquely vulnerable in perhaps a high school age group.
And frontal lobe, from what I know, has to do with executive functioning, decision-making, lack of impulsivity, that kind of thing. So as we get further on into symptoms, maybe might explain why something like a concussion could have an effect on those types of behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
I actually read a study also in preparing for this that showed that the number of ER visits for traumatic brain injury due to basketball rose this year, and it was highest in children. In children and in adolescents, that's where it rose, and it was highest with girls and younger children, having the greatest proportional increases. So that, again, speaks to what we talked about before the break.
Yes.
More younger children, more girls playing.
Correct. And I think also, if I'm right, that same study, not only are there more ER visits, but the proportion of traumatic brain injuries is higher in girls and in the younger groups. Again, the thought being that, you know, a lot of these kids are using regular-sized basketballs and other things, and you have often you have quite a mismatch between the sizes of kids playing sports at those younger ages,
right?
Because development progresses at different rates. So there could be lots of things contributing to that increase.
Tell us a little bit about what are the symptoms of. You talked a little bit of how you recognize a concussion, but what does it do to you? What happens to you?
So there's
in the short term and then beyond.
Right. The short term symptoms. The most common symptom is headache, but of course a headache is not specific to a concussion, so it can be quite vexing when an athlete has a headache. Is it just a headache or is it a concussion? Well, what we look for in addition to the headache are other physical symptoms such as dizziness, nausea, balance problems. Then there can be emotional behavioral symptoms, irritability, or being more emotional than normal. And then you can have the cognitive symptoms, which are really the hallmark of the injury, some alteration in the mental status of the person that lets you know that that brain's not functioning right.
They're
not
remembering.
So a good example would be that they're confused, they're asking the same question over and over, they seem sluggish and slow, their speech seems slow. Athletic trainers will often give athletes three words to remember and then 5 minutes later come back and see if they can remember those words on the sideline. And despite trying to repeat them to themselves over and over so they can get back in the game, in many cases, the athlete won't be able to remember those words. So memory is often disrupted as well.
So that's in the short term. So that's mm-hmm. within the first, what, hour, 2 hours? I mean, give us kind of a general unfolding of how this, if you truly have a concussion, how does it manifest itself?
That's a interesting question because it's so variable. Some
sure.
people can have very minor symptoms right away that seem to clear up in a matter of moments, and then the next morning be absolutely miserable with severe headache, dizziness, vomiting. Other people can be unconscious for 5 minutes on the field, airlifted to University Hospital because we're concerned about a neck injury or a seizure, and they can feel remarkably good the next day.
Mm.
So it's a very difficult injury because of the variability. What we generally see is that symptoms, generally speaking, seem to worsen in the several hours after the injury and then steadily improve over time.
Is there something to the myth of not allowing someone to fall asleep?
That comes from the days before CT scans and before I think there's been more research on concussion in the last 5 years than all previous years combined. So our general understanding of the injury is much better. In general, I don't think the recommendation is to wake people up all night. The brain actually needs rest. If a CT scan hasn't been done, a lot of physicians will still recommend that you see if the person will stir, because we want to make sure that there isn't more severe brain effects, such as a person lapsing into a coma or something. But that is extremely rare. There's the high-profile case of Natasha Richardson.
That's exactly what I thought of.
Yes, and a lot of people are concerned about that, but that's a case where, the signs were there, but by the time people realized what was going on, she was so far from a neurosurgery center that she wasn't able to be helped. So that was the issue there. If you're living in central New York, By the time you know, things are getting bad, it's going to become obvious and you're going to be able to get medical attention for it.
So let's say you have a child who's been hit in either football or what have you and blacked out. And, you know, what's the recommendation? What do you do at that point? What should be done?
The consensus recommendation from sports experts for several years now, especially for high school and younger age athletes, is that person is immediately removed from the game or practice. And again, going back to the take-home message here, is that if you're suspicious that a person suffered an injury, remove them, get them properly evaluated, and don't allow them to go back and sustain another injury before either we're sure that they didn't have a previous one, that someone said, okay, maybe it wasn't a concussion, or if it was a concussion, that we know that they're fully recovered. And that can be a bit tricky to figure out.
So I guess let's say they are then brought to an athletic trainer, the athletic trainer makes that determination in some way and they are allowed to rest. What can you then expect? How long do the symptoms of headache or dizziness or confusion generally last, assuming no other, you know, greater injury is incurred?
So if the athletic trainer is suspicious of concussion, the recommendation is to get medical evaluation typically within 24 hours. If the symptoms are more severe, if there's vomiting, if there's severe headache, or if there's very significant confusion, they will be sent to the emergency department and a CT scan may be done to rule out more severe injury. But if we're pretty confident that what we're dealing with is a concussion, then the recommendation is for physical and mental rest. And this is very important. A lot of times we're concerned about our athletes, but we forget about the student part, and kids are allowed to go back to school, and right when their brain is needing energy and rest to recover, they're being asked to, you know, take a math test. So we really want to emphasize physical and mental rest, especially for that first week or two. If the person feels much better within 2 days, then we can have them go back to activities. But if they don't, we really want to rest them. In most cases, then, we're going to see complete recovery within a week or two. But once they're symptom-free at rest, there's a progression of steps that they need to go through where we gradually increase exertion to see if the symptoms will come back before we actually let them go back to a game situation. And that's a very important point.
So generally you might send them back to school if things are looking kind of copacetic and quieted down, but you might still withhold them in terms of going back into any kind of potential injury situation.
It used to be that when a person was symptom-free and came to the doctor and said, I feel good, that the next day they might be back on the football field or the basketball court. Now, if they say that they're symptom-free for a 24-hour period, the next day they can do light aerobic exercise and we wait 24 hours to see whether symptoms return. If they don't, then we increase the activity level, progressing them into light contact and more heavy contact, always looking for a return of symptoms, because sometimes the brain might seem fine, but because it's having trouble using energy, because it's still recovering, when we stress it out, the brain, either mentally or physical or even emotional stress, we can actually see that the symptoms come back, and that's a clue that the person's not really fully recovered.
And it sounds to me like the symptoms that you're talking about that come back could also manifest themselves in ways that are not as evident. For example, it may not be fatigue, but maybe the individual has a little bit more impulsive than they were before. Is that true?
Absolutely. Impulsivity would be a symptom of traumatic brain injury, including concussion, because, again, the frontal lobe can be affected. Emotional outbursts, uncharacteristic personality changes, sleep changes, troubles concentrating in class. All of these things can be very characteristic.
Hold that thought, because we have to take another quick break. And, so much to talk about. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, 570 WSYI.